Welcome into the Train with the Best podcast. I'm Craig Hoffman.
Chris Gores.
And today is a conditioning day. That's what we're talking about. And as we record this on Saturday morning, Chris, I'm slightly terrified because I am headed in a little bit to Heart Day at Cut 7. And this is the first time that I will be taking Heart Day in the original studio. And I've taken Chris Perrin a couple times this week, his class. Chris, obviously, great guest on the podcast, a good friend. If you missed that a couple weeks ago, definitely go back and check it out, and you'll probably understand why I'm so petrified. But I've taken it at the Union Market pop-up that they do. I've taken it at the 14th Street outdoor space. But he is a different person inside that studio, and I am absolutely mortified.
There are workouts like that.
Thanks for the encouragement.
And you got to find it within you to make it through.
Yeah, or just lie down on the floor and be like, Chris, you win this round. Because it was a half heart. It was a arms heart on Wednesday. And I thought I was going to die. And today's just heart. So this will be fun. If this podcast is in memoriam of me, then I hope you guys have enjoyed it. And Chris, the reins are all yours. If not, we'll see you next week. But we're going to talk about conditioning in general today on the heels of Lorenzo's 300-meter adventures and some of the programming that we're doing, programming for athletes and what conditioning looks like there and a larger scale scope of conditioning, and also for general population. We talk about strength so much in the strength and conditioning space, but what about the actual conditioning side of it? Is it more than that? Just that finisher at the end? Is it, you know, what is it, and how should it be programmed? So we'll talk about that in just a little bit. What else you got going on though? Anything exciting for you this week?
Father's Day is tomorrow, so trying to figure out what we're gonna do. We may do just like a little day trip to the beach, or we may just hang out. I'm down for either of those. So, we've got that coming up. Little trip to Charlottesville this week. My daughter's gonna be going to the softball camp at UVA.
Nice.
It'll be a good chance for her to get out, see some other people in the sport, meet some new people, make some new friends. I just see a bigger world than where she's in right now. Because, you know, you get into these little bubbles, wherever sport you play, you get into these bubbles, whether it's with your team or your club or your region or whatever, and you start to think that, oh, wow, this is the world. And it's not. There's a much bigger world out there. Whoever it is that you think you're competing against, that you think that you've started to dominate, there's another club out there, there's another region out there that is better than you. And you got to go find it so that you can make yourself better. So that's what this will be about for her. Looking forward to that.
Back to the Father's Day thing. Are you a Father's Day father who's like, I get to choose what we do today? Or do you just try to be like, hey, kids, what do you want to do today? Do they get to choose what your day is?
I guess it's not like, hey, I look forward to Father's Day and we're going to do what I want to do. It is more like the second thing that you said, but depends on what my mood is, or depends on what they're asking for. Cause DJ has a million ideas that he wants to do. He'll
shocking.
Be like, I want to go do this, and then we'll go do this, and then we'll do this. And then I'm like, buddy, there's only 24 hours in a day. And I don't have that type of energy. So
I'm glad you want to honor me with all these activities, but I am tired.
Yeah, right. So, it's a little bit of a mix of both. Like, I definitely, it's not like I want to do this.
Yeah, because there are those dads that are like, this is my day. And while you are the children who make me a father, I am going to play golf, and that's their Father's Day.
There is that. I enjoy playing golf, but golf is so long.
Yeah,
and Father's Day is in the middle of June, so like. It's hot.
Right. No, you're going to do it, play 9 holes early and then be done for the day.
I wish golf was like 3 holes or 6 holes.
An hour
even
9
holes is like too long for me.
Really?
Because 9 holes could be like a couple hours.
Yeah, but like 9 holes is, I don't know. I typically, when I play 9, by 9, I've like started to figure a few things out. Maybe I'm playing a little bit better. And then sometimes I'm dumb enough to play the other 9. And then sometimes I'm just smart enough to leave and be like, okay, next time I'm going to, I got some momentum. It never is how that works. I'm going to be just as terrible off the first tee the next time I play, but at least it's an hour and a half to 2 hours and out. And I feel somewhat good about myself.
Yeah. I feel like if you could play six, that's like an hour to an hour and a half, depending on how fast that you play.
Yeah.
Which is, that's the right time frame for me, at least. That's the right, it's the time commitment for me.
So into the business plan goes the train with the best golf course, train with the best links, a six-hole course.
Well, no, we'll still have 18 holes for those that want to play 18, but we
also just have a six-hole rate.
Yeah.
Six and out. I like it. Or just honestly,
I would offer three holes. Okay, let's go out there and play three holes.
Just let's get a credit card machine in the cart. You know, you pay for three initially, and if you want to keep playing, you just got to swipe to continue.
Right.
Man, I played really well in the first three. Let's see how I do after six. All right. No, that was good. I'm good for the day. I'm going to go have lunch. Golf, a sport that I guess requires some conditioning if you're walking the course, but not a whole lot.
Not going to call golf walking 18 holes conditioning.
Hey, loaded carries, man. Loaded carries. And it's also, depending on how good you are, if you have to zigzag a lot, it's a lot more conditioning.
Again, it's a lot of walking. I am not going to call that conditioning.
Fair. We're going to talk about actual conditioning next.
Yeah.
The Train with the Best podcast is brought to you by Super Coffee, a drink so good that it makes you wonder when you take your first sip, is this actually good for me? Answer is yes. 10 grams of protein, 80 calories per bottle, and you are set to go with zero sugar. And it tastes like something that has, I don't know, like 52 grams of sugar, 370 calories. That's what a Starbucks Frappuccino has. So let's dump the Frappuccino and let's shift over to Super Coffee. And if you're like me and you recently discovered that you're lactose intolerant, you don't have to give up Super Coffee. For years, I've been telling you guys that I love the original flavors, and that's still true. Like, from a flavor standpoint, I love the mocha. I love the hazelnut. Those are probably my two favorites, the vanilla. Those are probably my three favorites, and they're three of the four original flavors that they had. Unfortunately, they're made with whey protein, and that is not good for your boy. So what I've done recently is started shifting to the coconut mocha and the French vanilla, the dairy-free flavors, and it's much better for me. They're still delicious, and they still have protein, and they still have MCTs, and it's amazing. And you can get them for 25% off, just like you can every other super product. It's 25% off your entire first purchase at drinksupercoffee.com if you use the code TWTB. You can also check it out nationwide in over 25,000 stores like Target, Whole Foods, Walmart, Kroger, and CVS. But the only way to get that 25% off is to go to drinksupercoffee.com/TWTB. And it comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee, meaning if you don't love it, you get your money back. No questions asked. The Train with the Best podcast is brought to you by Momentous. Last couple weeks, I've told you about the brand new recovery protein that has just launched. Well, there's even more good stuff coming from Momentous. Launching this week, the Essential Multivitamin. Now, a multivitamin isn't necessarily something that you need, but it's basically impossible in a modern American diet and in any diet to get every single macro and especially, we're talking about this multivitamin, micronutrient that you need. So daily supplementation becomes a best practice, even if it's not essential, if you will. Now, what makes the Momentous multivitamin the one you need to get? Very simply, chelated minerals. The mineral form is optimal for absorption and helps reduce nausea sometimes associated with multivitamins. So if you've taken one in the past and you're like, that was not good for me, try this one out. It'll probably go much better. Natural state ingredients. And by the way, they haven't taken any shortcuts to the point that it's a 4-pill serving size. You typically take 2 in the morning, 2 at night, let's say, because they did not want to take shortcuts just to be like, oh, look, it's a cute little gummy. And that actually doesn't have the effect that you want. Because Momentous is serious. That's why every single product they make is NSF certified for sport. And you can get all of these products at livemomentous.com. Use the code TRAINWITHTHEBEST25 for 25% off your first order on a subscription, and it's 15% off all the concurrent ones. So you just set it up once, and you're getting a discount from now until forever. That's livemomentous.com, the code TRAINWITHTHEBEST25, because if you're going to train with the best, you better recover with the best, and that's why we choose Momentous. The Train with the Best podcast is brought to you by True Socks. Now, if you want to see True Socks in action, the video is in. You heard us talk about True Socks in episode 160 with Jim Chernesky, who, you know, created them. Then the next episode, we talked a little bit about this workout we did with a bunch of fit pros in DC. And for that workout, we all wore True Socks. And while it couldn't help us dying while Chris kicked our ass, at least we weren't slipping in the process. The grip that we had, the ability to cut without our foot sliding in our shoe or our foot sliding in our sock, it's what makes True Socks a must-have for any athlete. And if you want to check the video, check our Instagram at trainwiththebest21 for the video evidence. You can get your True Socks for 20% off using the code TWTB, as in Train with the Best, TWTB, at true.online. That's TRU.online. Or follow them on Instagram for the link at official True Socks. Proud to partner with them at the Train with the Best podcast. Use our code TWTB for 20% off. This week on Catch the Spirit, we celebrate Pride with the one and only Rainbow Warrior herself, Joanna Loman, the only player in Spirit franchise history with her number retired and one of the leading advocates in sports for LGBTQ rights. So we talked to her during Pride Month, during Pride Weekend here in DC about her advocacy over the years and her own personal journey. It was a really fascinating conversation about her new book as well. So make sure you check it out. Catch the Spirit, available anywhere you get your podcasts. Conditioning. It is the part of strength and conditioning that is not talked about nearly as much. And it is also the part that probably puts fear into clients, athletes, Gen Pop, everyone alike, because nobody really likes it. It's the part that you got to do. And it's worthy of discussion, though, and I wanted to talk about it as I said off the top, preparing for Heart Day, but also as we put together this program with Lorenzo, which is out as of this podcast being out. It's out on Monday, June 21st, so if you're listening to it on that day, it's out. If you're listening to it after that day, it's been out, and we talked a bit last week about the 300-meter shuttles that or the 300-yard shuttles that right. Lorenzo was having a lot of fun with. Happy to report from Zoe. He did better with them this week. He hasn't gotten the times that he would like yet, but it was a less painful experience. He didn't have to lay down next to the car after. Right. But Chris, I always love doing this to you where I just like put the biggest topics in fitness out there and say, all right, so what do you think about this? So conditioning, when you start to think about conditioning, like what are the elements that you think about?
So again, just like with strength and corrective exercise and all this other stuff, right? Like you have to think about who your client is mm-hmm. and what sport do they play and what are they good at now? You know, so really what the way that I break it down is for athletes, you have open sport athletes and closed sport athletes, right? So closed sport athletes being track runners and swimmers and even to a certain extent, like a pitcher in baseball is a closed sport or a closed skill, I would say. So conditioning that is a little bit different than conditioning an open sport like football, basketball, soccer, because there's decision-making involved in that, mm-hmm. right? So that's the first kind of thing that I think about is open sport versus closed sport. And then I break down conditioning into three different zones, which is like your zone one, which is like long, anything over 15, 20 minutes of work, constant work, right? And that's going to be at a moderate to slow pace, right? It may not be slow in terms of like what you think is slow, but slow compared to what zone three would be, which is your super fast pace, quick sprints, like 6 to 10 seconds, maximum right. effort, nothing more than 100 yards in total, right? Per repetition with plenty of rest in between, maybe even full recovery in between. And then everything that's in between would be zone two, which is like your 300-yard shuttles and things like that. Zone one, I'm always trying to get them off of the ground. Like, get them on a bike, get them on a rower, get them in the swimming pool, anything where their feet don't hit the ground. Because there's just not a lot of value in the sports world unless you are trying to run a triathlon or trying to complete a 5K or a marathon and that's your goal, there's just not a whole lot of value to running in a straight line without thinking, without choosing, without making a decision or reacting to something, and just doing that for a long period of time. That's just not what sports looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Not in anything that's on the field or a court. So there's not a value. There's not a lot of value to that. Whereas the detriment to that is you're hitting the ground a lot, especially if you're doing like running on the road. That's right. Going to be a lot of joint pain that you're inviting, and it's not worth it, right? Like the bang's not worth the buck there, right? So why not get rid of the risk or the detriment to running, still take advantage of the long distance cardio and all that other stuff, and you can do that on a bike and in a swimming pool or on a rower, different things like that. So I don't value long distance cardio at all for an athlete.
Long distance running,
yeah. For an athlete who's doesn't have a goal of long distance running.
And I think that probably most listeners of this podcast know that we have long dispelled the myth that sports like basketball and soccer, where you might run 3, 5, 7 miles in a game, are not the same as a 3, 5, or 7 mile run. Right. It's just not the intensity and the right points on the velocity spectrum that you're going to hit. If you can go out there and run a 6:30 mile, like, that's great, but you're going to get blown by if you don't know how to sprint. And if you're not a powerful and effective sprinter on a soccer field, on a basketball court, it's a lot more sprint, recover, sprint, recover, sprint, recover. And the conditioning has to reflect that. But there obviously is the ability to build capacity. Like you said, some of that longer cardio that is best spent not running. That's essential to kind of build up the capacity in the same way that, you know, you build up muscle fibers before and do like hypertrophy and build muscle before you try to make it strong and make it twitchy and all that kind of stuff. You know, building that capacity is a nice way to help expand your possibilities, but ultimately you have to have those other two areas of ESD, energy systems development, to be able to succeed in sport. And probably prescribing that is, I think, essential, because I do think that there has been a little bit of a shift where now there are a lot of under-conditioned athletes at really high levels where body maintenance has taken a front seat to actually being prepared enough to perform the duties that an athlete needs, where you have all these injuries that, you know, I was thinking about this with the NBA stuff, right? Like, LeBron goes off the other day, and rightfully so. Like, he was absolutely right. He said, this is a really stupid idea, and nobody wanted to listen. And people were like, oh, well, not everyone else played into into October like you did. But he turns out to be right. Everyone else, I mean, he made it to the end of the season, even though he was hurt, but he at least finished the season. So many of the other superstars at his level are not going to finish the season because they're hurt. You know, Kawhi Leonard may have torn his ACL. They haven't really announced that yet, but he's now missed the last couple of games, and we'll see if he's back for the Western Conference Finals. AD, all these guys are out. And, you know, they used to play the same number of games or a similar number of games with more back-to-backs, way worse travel. Like, and I'm talking like back in the 80s and stuff, when they would fly coach and these 6'11" guys are squeezing into coach seats on planes and playing back-to-backs, and the injury rates were lower, and the conditioning was much, and the strength side as well, was much less sophisticated. And I think that's a multifaceted problem. The athletes today are much bigger and stronger and generate a lot more force, which is going to lead to more injury. But I do think that there is obviously a balance between maintenance and not overdoing it versus building the proper capacity actually needed. And so, you know, over conditioning, under conditioning, and if you don't hit it right, that's when you're like, there's risk on either side of the spectrum.
Right. I think there's certainly a lot going on there, especially when it comes to the NBA, because it's such a complicated, it's there's so much more to balancing that equation than what you said, right? It's
which oh is yeah, like absolutely.
The, you know, getting people ready versus maintaining their bodies and what it takes, as well as like playing an intense game schedule. And especially once you get to the postseason, the games are a lot more intense. There's not a lot of nights off where you can just go and race to whoever gets to 140 points wins, right? Like, mm-hmm. you're not going to see too many of those games where it's 144 to 136, where that's a lot of what the Wizards were doing in the middle of the season, right?
Yeah.
You'll see games where it's 87 to 83. I think that was like game three or game four of the Bucks Nets, right? Like, that's mm-hmm. and those are two pretty high scoring teams.
Yeah.
So the games get more intense. The frequency of the games is a little bit more. No, you don't have the back to backs, but you're playing three or four times in a week, right? Your lines or the amount of people that you play start to decrease, right? Your rotation becomes a little bit smaller, and the minutes that you play becomes a little bit larger. And
yeah.
all eyes are on you, so the demand to perform, not to mention the stress level, right? Like the mental stress level of going through the playoffs
Absolutely.
Is also contributing to that. So there's a lot there that's more than just even physical, right? But there yeah. is something to be said for, like, yes, there's you do have to maintain your bodies, and you do have to watch it with playing back-to-backs or on the second night of a back-to-back or whatever. But there's also, like, you have to get your body ready for that type of schedule. Not just the ability to play a game and go 30, 40, 48 minutes, whatever, but the ability to bounce back, right? That resiliency mm-hmm. that we talk about. And I think in football, we talk about it all the time, right? Like, we can go out here and run routes all day, but you're not in football shape until you start getting hit. Like, you got to get mm-hmm. hit. So, yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about getting these guys ready and through the course of a longer season, maybe that's what you have. I don't know. There's a lot to this equation that I'm willing to say that I don't know.
Yeah, well, but I do think it goes back, at least part of filling in that gap and part of closing that gap is to ensure that the conditioning represents the sport and reflects the sport, right?
Yes,
and so,
sure.
you know, when you talk about conditioning and a drill at the end of your session or however you want to do it, you know, maybe it's a full-on conditioning day. Maybe your session that day isn't a strength day. Maybe it's a 45-minute conditioning session. And if it's just a bunch of cone drills or speed right. ladders, like, that's not going to work for a sport athlete, because the nervous system demand and thus the physical demand is not going to match what you have to do when you have to make decisions. The mental stress of competing, the mental stress of decision making, the mental stress of a crowd, if that's, you know, depending on what level of athlete you're working with, you know, if you're working with a high school athlete or a professional athlete who might play in a World Cup and have a really big crowd, like, those all are going to be factors in the deteriorating condition over the course of a game. And if you don't train them and build a bigger capacity, then you're going to see an injury potentially, or an elevated risk of injury. One quote that I loved, and I apologize, I can try to look this up real quick to try to get the guy's name, but he's the strength coach for the Australian national baseball team. He's previously worked in Major League Baseball a bunch, mm-hmm. but there was an article actually that Chris Perrin sent me about the rising injury rate in Major League Baseball. And he talked about how there is a huge bullets in the gun approach right now. Like, oh, this, you know, that guy's arm's only got so many bullets in the gun. And it's like, no, that's a really terrible way to approach it. Because if you save 10 pitches today, in 5 days from now, you don't have 10 extra pitches. That's not how that works. But so much focus is on keeping the bullets in the gun. And he's like, my job, the way I see it, the way my approach is I want to build a bigger chamber. And I think the guys who have that bigger chamber, like Max Scherzer over the years, and he's finally starting to break down a little bit with the Nationals, but he's in his late 30s and has won a bunch of rings and has been playing forever. You know, those are the guys that are dominant, the guys who can, and who, by the way, can throw 9 innings for you in the postseason and go complete game shutout in a World Series game because they have the bigger capacity to do so.
Yeah, I think there's two things to that, right? Like, I think I agree with the bigger chamber thing. I don't know that I necessarily even like the bullets in the gun reference, although I think I know what they're talking about. And of course, like, it's easy to take.
It's like all the pitch counts and all that kind of stuff. That,
right,
that,
right.
Like, super
right.
hard it's, pitch counts, like those things are, you know, it, like it actually is a finite number that if you go over 75, 80, 100 pitches, like there's nothing left. The guy's going to get hurt. And that's just not how it works.
Yeah, again, like, I would probably have to read the article to learn more about it. And then even in the article, like, these things can be taken out of context, right, and say, hey, like, the bullets in the gun is not meant to necessarily be hard. I don't know. So are there bullets in the gun? Do you have to have a pitch count? I think you do, because in a pitch count or whatever it is, right, like, if you get a certain amount of reps, if you're playing a certain amount of minutes in a game or you're doing – whatever, right? Yeah, there is a threshold there where the risk starts to increase, right? Where you start to say, okay, like, once you start to fatigue, the chance of injury starts to increase. That's just
absolutely
fact, right. So
right.
Yeah, at some point there's got to be a pitch count for somebody that says, hey, this is where it is, and after they start to do this, then we should probably think about whether we're going to pull them or not. And
sure.
That may not be like a solid number. That may be something that you just have to keep your eyes on. Like, what are their mechanics
right.
like?
Right. Is there a velocity drop of a certain percentage? Like, there's factors
right.
that can ultimately be those indicators. But I think what he's saying in terms of the training side
correct.
Is not like
yeah,
once
where,
you get to game, once
agree.
You get to game day, it's over. It's like the conversation we have with Kristen from Whoop, right? Like, she's like, why wouldn't you move it? Well, you're like, well, if the game is on Saturday, the game is on Saturday. You have to
that's
go
right.
out and perform.
That's right.
And maybe you know, at that point, you limit your minutes or whatever so that you don't get hurt and you're available the next Saturday. But ultimately, like, if the game is on Saturday, the game is on Saturday. Once the game starts, like, whatever your conditioning level is, however many bullets you have in the gun at that point is the number. But if your goal as a trainer is to see how effective you can get someone to be in 100 pitches versus can I get you to where you're capable of consistently throwing 120?
Yep.
That's a different goal. And
yeah, exactly. That's
and that's
what
I think
what
he's
I
talking
say.
About, building a bigger chamber, building that capacity, and ultimately being better conditioned to be able to perform. Because, like, to take it back to basketball, right? If I'm a coach and my star player only has 35 minutes in them, that's 13 minutes that I've got to fill with an inferior player while they're not on the court. That hurts my team. And
right.
that's why guys who can play 40, 45 minutes in the playoffs, why Stephen Curry this year, when he took the time that he actually did have, because the Warriors didn't make the playoffs and weren't in the bubble last year, and then he was hurt, like, he focused on his conditioning and he was able to play more minutes, and that led to a more competitive Warriors team because they got more Steph Curry. And I think availability being a skill, building that capacity is a really worthy goal of chasing. But it obviously does come with the line of, like, if you hurt yourself training because you're over conditioning, there is diminishing returns.
Yeah, for sure. So like when I'm talking about the, just going back to the chambers thing, like, I love that. I love that analogy. So again, like, when you're playing, that's a different thing. And then when you're training, like you said, that's a different thing. So yeah, of course we train for a bigger chamber. Typically in the athletes that I train, cause I don't train a lot of pitchers, so I'll just throw that out there. But
yeah,
when we're training an athlete, I go through this all the time, especially with, I'm just going to say it, like, college freshmen or incoming freshmen, right? And typically it's the women who are more anxious about their conditioning than the men. They just are. They're like, oh my God, I really need to pass the beep test. Even though, like, what I really want to tell them is, hey, the beep test doesn't mean shit. Like, just go out there and ball. If you go out there and you play and you're clearly one of the best on the field and you're clearly in shape when it matters and you're still running around and making good decisions, like, what you get on a fucking beep test doesn't matter. That's just something there for the strength and conditioning coaches to say that, hey, they did something for the summer. Like, you know what I mean? So
right.
It's one of those things. But these athletes, they get so anxious about it. They're like, oh my God, I have to pass this. And the way that I explain it to them is this, going back to the bullets in the chamber. If you run 18 miles per hour, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you run at 18 miles per hour, and you're trying to sustain a level of fitness, right? And you're trying to build it from the back end. Let's say 85% effort of 18 miles per hour. Here comes the calculator thing. That's 15.3 miles per hour.
I'm going to trust you. You're the calculator.
All right.
I can pull up mine to double check you, but I need my actual phone to do this.
18
times 0.85 is 15.3.
18 minus 2.7 is 15.3. Yeah. Okay. So 15.3 miles per hour is your 85%. That's a lot as far as like what your effort level is. 85% effort is a lot of effort, right? Like there's not a whole lot of difference between 85% and say 90, right? So for you to sustain 85%, we can train that way and say, all right, we're just going to try to hold on to 85% for as long as you can. But hey, like you're probably going to drop down to 75% pretty quickly, right? You're probably going to drop to 70% less than that, right? Even quicker than that. So at that point, if you're running at 18 to 70%, that is 12.6 miles per hour, right?
It's more impressive when you do it without the calculator.
Okay. So we can sit here and we can like struggle and run these things that is going to be really freaking hard, and you're going to feel like shit, and it's going to be chasing like this sustainability of, can I maintain this level of effort, right? And I just put these numbers out there to give people an idea. These are the numbers, right? At 18 miles per hour, if that's your max speed, by the time you get to 70%, you're only running 12.6 miles per hour, right? But what if we can get you to 20 miles per hour in a max speed, right?
Right.
Because if we can get you 20 miles per hour at a max speed, hey, now you can run at 70%, and that's still 14 miles per hour, right?
Yeah,
We can have you run at 75%, which is in a different energy system zone, by the way, right? If you're running at 75% at 20 miles per hour of max speed, that's 15 miles per hour. That's only 0.3 off of the guy that's running 85%, right?
Right.
So, and not to mention, you have what it takes when it's time to turn the jets on in the beginning of the game. You're winning to the ball because you can run 20, and that person can only run 18. So, right.
And if you have it left in the tank by the end of the game, your sprint's faster. So
your sprint's faster. And by the way, like it's not an all out sprint to the ball. It's an all out sprint to win the position to get to the ball. Because once you're ahead, then you can start to throttle down, and you can like body off and shield off or whatever. So it's not an all-out sprint to the ball. You just need to have that gas pedal when you need the gas pedal. So that's what we work on, acceleration and top-end speed. And this is why I like to, like, for me, I don't really work on zone two. When we were talking about the different zones of conditioning that I like to think about, I'll throw that out there in programs for people who need it. Like when Zoe says, hey, we want to do like a conditioning program to get these guys ready. And a lot of that is not necessarily even to get them ready for the game, to be honest, Craig. Like a lot of that is for me to get them ready for their strength and conditioning coach, because their strength and conditioning coach is going to be a dickhead. So, no, it's just true. Like a lot You're of what we wrong. Do is to get our athletes ready for their strength and conditioning coach, not to get them ready for their actual game. Because their strength and conditioning coach wants to prove, I don't know what they're trying to prove, right? So a lot of my conditioning when I'm actually working with athletes is to get them in zone one, get them off the ground, get them to sustain that like a low level effort for a long period of time, because we still need that. But then once we get into it, I like to do it on a hard day, right? Like, hey, we just did heavy squats and deadlifts and like a heavy legs day yesterday. Today is the day that you have 8 sprints, and these are the times that you got to make it in. It's going to be all-out effort. You got to find it somewhere. You have what it takes to give me 8 sprints.
It sounds good, man. Can't wait to catch up.
No matter how sore your legs feel right now, you have what it takes. So there, it's a little bit of a combination of both, like training them on the mental side of it, like, hey, how am I going to find it when I don't feel like I have it, right? And just getting into that max effort gear. Right, like getting into that point where we let everything go, and we don't try to save it for the 12th rep, or we don't try to save it for 30 minutes into the game. No, I need you to empty your chamber now, and replenish it. And that's kind of how I approach it, and I think it works, because people go and then you know what ends up happening? They go and they finally go to. they report in the fall for their sport, and they run their whatever conditioning test they are, and they're all
and they beat all the
passing
seniors
with fly colors and doing it easy, and everybody else is struggling, and they're like, oh wow, yeah, I shouldn't have been so anxious about this, you know?
Yeah, so definitely. The other thing I'll add just real quick on the back end here is that when you talk about in season, like, and even preseason, right? Because we talked about this so much before. When we are the off-season trainer for an athlete, our job is to not get them ready for the season. It's to get them ready for preseason. But our time is not best spent typically on the conditioning. Like, it's an element right. of it. But like you said, strength, power, you know, explosiveness, all that kind of stuff is going to contribute to the conditioning, because the stronger and more powerful and faster an athlete is, the less stress they undergo ultimately in a game to achieve the skill that they need. But there's nothing in terms of conditioning that replaces the game itself. And
correct.
In that way, practice. So like, if you're like, oh my God, my athlete needs to be able to run, you know, on off basically interval sprints while decision making for 2 45-minute intervals because there are 2 45-minute segments because they're a soccer player. Like, you're not going to spend 90 minutes trying to create drills around doing that. Like, that's what practice is for. That's what, you know, scrimmaging is for. That's what playing pickup is for, right? Like, an athlete in the off season should be playing some pickup to keep their skill set sharp and
yeah.
You know, of course, they shouldn't be out there playing a bunch of games. They need to get their rest. There's a time for it. There's a time not for it. And we don't need to spend the time today getting into all that. But like, ultimately, that's where like nothing's going to replace that anyway. So yes, you can help and train the skills and do a little bit of supplemental conditioning to try to help boost things along. But ultimately, nothing replaces practice. And that's an important thing, I think, to keep in the back of your mind. And it's also why, you know, at the professional levels too, when you talk about understanding the loads and all that kind of stuff, you know, whether it be a Megan Young with the Red Stars or Michael Minthorn, I watch this with the Spirit all the time, you know, practice would end, the players would look over and look at Michael, be like, Michael, do I have to run today? Because they have a certain load that they know they need to hit. And if they got there in during the scrimmage portion of practice, whether it was a 5v5 or, you know, throughout the entire practice, ending with either a 5v5, 6v6, all the way up to 11v11, if they hit their load, then they're good. Maybe they even got pulled a couple minutes early out of that game because they hit their load for the day. Or they might have had to run, you know, 7 120s after practice because it just didn't come naturally throughout the course and they want to get that extra running in. So, you know, at the highest levels where the data is available, that's a huge right. part of it. But
that's a great advantage to have. Like, if you have that kind of data available and it's absolutely. Live and you can say, hey, this is the person that didn't run as much today or this person that hit their goals. That's amazing to have. And it's a tool that I wish
it drives home. That sweet spot mentality of like, there's overtraining and there's undertraining and there's somewhere right in the middle where you're going to get the maximum return and also maximum prevention or maximum resiliency from injury. But that should all come through as game-like of an experience as possible. And the closest thing to a game is a practice or a scrimmage, which isn't something that you can recreate as a strength and conditioning coach.
Yeah, correct. I mean, we can do as much as – I mean, we do a lot with reacting to stuff. Like, we can throw the blaze pods out there, and we can throw different things out there. But nothing is going to replace playing the actual game against actual people. At the right intensity, though, right? And this is you mentioned pickup, and this is my problem with pickup that I see for a lot of soccer players because they play pickup in the off season. But it's a lot of shitty ass pickup, to be honest with you, right? Like, especially like if you watch the pace of a game in the NWSL, and you watch the pace of the game of when they play pickup against 45-year-old has-beens who are just out there just like trying to kick the ball around and prove that they're better than women. I don't know what they're trying to do out there, actually. But, like, that's a shitty-ass pace. Like, that's not actually getting you better. If anything, it's getting you worse. And there are times to take it down. I'm not saying that everything has to be balls to the wall. I'm certainly not saying that. There is a time to go out there and play matches where it's a little bit slower pace and you got to build yourself up. Just like, hey, like, we're talking about MLB pitchers. There's a time for them to go out there and throw in a double-A game. You know what I mean? Where the stress level is much less. They're not going against the competition. You know, they can just go out there, work on mechanics, this and that. Go out there, work on your touch. But if you're always doing that, guess what your body is adapting to? Guess what you're training your body and your mind to do? You know what I mean?
Right.
You have to find a way to get an intense pace in or cut it off, right? Like limit the amount of time that you spend playing shitty pickup in the off season. Because if you're going to do that for 2 hours, 3 hours a day, every single day, you're going to get worse as a player.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's why when I was thinking pickup, I know a couple of years ago, Paige Nielsen from the Spirit, she played a lot out of pickup with MLS players. And you could see like the speed of her game pick up in the ensuing season because she's all of a sudden out there playing with the guys on a professional level. But yeah, if you just go find pickup in the park, that's probably not going to be too helpful. So that's it. That's all. We've run the drill for this podcast. Again, the program with Lorenzo is out. I'll put a link on our website, trainwiththebest21.com, or you can obviously get it on Instagram as well, or search the OMG series in the Train Heroic Marketplace. That is the most direct way to get it. For Chris, I'm Craig, and we'll see you next time here on the Train with the Best podcast.